I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Mr. President, Mr. Secretary General, my fellow leaders, about a week ago, I stood on the other side of the world in Vietnam on soil once bloody with war. And I met a small group of veterans, Americans and Vietnamese, who witnessed, and I watched the exchange of personal artifacts from that war, identification cards and a diary. It was deeply moving to see the reaction of the Vietnamese and American soldiers. Culmination of 50 years of hard work on both sides to address the painful legacies of war and to choose to work together toward peace and a better future. Nothing about that journey was inevitable. For decades, it would have been unthinkable for an American president to stand in Hanoi alongside a Vietnamese leader and announce a mutual commitment to the highest level of country's partnership.
The words of President Biden today as he addressed the United Nations, and there's not much you can argue against as to what he was saying. It's just, how's it going to play out? And if it means that the U.S. has to acquiesce to the rest of the world, we say no. If it means that they truly will join with us to make the world better and to rid it of Marxism and communism and get away from this environmental push that has everyone upside down and all the woke culture that goes with it, then we will have some meaningful relationships. I'll break it down in more details for you. Thank you again for joining us. Here we are, September 19, 2023. This is the second of 2 hours of Larry Connors USA. And reminding you, we're on the air every day, Monday through Friday, from 6 to 8. We're also, while on the air, streaming video at LarryConnorsUSA.com. I'm sorry, Larry Connors USA Facebook and Twitter. Also, News Talk STL, Facebook and Twitter. And also on Rumble. And then if you miss any of those, you can always go to LarryConnorsUSA.com and get the video and audio. And when you do, you can also share them with others. And I note that many of you still continue to end up watching either late at night or early in the morning. It works for your schedule. That's fine. Glad to have you watch or listen when you can. And if you're listening live but still miss part of it, you can go back and pull it up and get more on it. If you missed the first hour, we did play that opening statement of President Biden, but tied it into how we have come forward after wars with other nations. I mentioned specifically Japan and Germany. And tied it to the current Netflix special, which is a re-airing of the HBO documentary Band of Brothers. If you haven't seen it, I think it's important, but the conclusion actually comes down to, obviously, those who fought against each other so hard, with desperation, they may not really be able to let go of hatred and anger, but at least they know we must move forward in peace. It is, I'm going to give President Biden kudos for being in Hanoi, as he was last week, because anytime we show such a bridge being closed, when our nation, the leader of the free world, can stand in Hanoi, it should be recognized for an additional effort. I'm not saying we go to bend down to them. I'm not saying we go to pay homage to them. I'm saying we do it on a respectful level. The same thing Trump did. And, of course, when it came to going to China, I never thought we would have a U.S. president go to China, and yet the one that went was at least the one I thought would never go, and that was Richard Nixon. But we do all live on the same planet. Now, I'm not going to let them take that philosophy and let it say, well, because we do, we all must sign up for greenhouse, green plans, green sky, so forth and so on. And even the European members who are in the UN, they have already backtracked on a lot of it as well. They have recognized and know shutting down fossil fuel is not a good idea right now. This administration, and there are some that exist within the UN that are all about it as well, believes we don't want it, we'll get rid of it. I'm for doing that if you have a replacement, not only for the energy supply and you don't lose your foothold in the world, but at the same time, the jobs. You're not at all the workers, of course, on strike right now. And you got Democrats rushing out saying, we're with you, we're with you. But they're really not. As I mentioned yesterday, they want to stab the current U.S. automaker in the back. The workers. But let's go back to Biden making his appearance today at the UN. Now, he was saying again that he believes we need, as the world body, to stand up to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. You know, have you stopped to think about it? We're now heading into the second autumn of that invasion. Biden said that Putin and his forces are betting the world will get tired of supporting Ukraine, so it's incumbent upon countries in the UN to stand firm. And he states, and I'm going to read from his quote here, if we allow Ukraine to be carved up, is the independence of any nation secure? I respectfully suggest the answer is no. We have to stand up to this naked aggression today and deter other would-be aggressors tomorrow. And again, that was part of his address today when it came to enemies and peace.
But it's a powerful reminder that our history need not dictate our future. With the concerted leadership and careful effort, adversaries can become partners. Overwhelming challenges can be resolved, and deep wounds can heal. So let us never forget that. When we choose to stand together and recognize the common hopes that bind all humanity, we hold our hands, the power in that power, to bend that arc of history. My fellow leaders, we gather once more at an inflection point in world history, with the eyes of the world upon all of you, all of us.
And he's talking about the inflection point being Ukraine and Russia and what we're doing or not doing about it. He said that we're dedicated here to a peaceful resolution of conflicts, but we're darkened by the shadow of war. He also did actually turn back to the future of democracy in the world and saying we, the U.S., and the UN, I assume he meant, will defend democracy. He frequently uses China as an example of the contrast that exists between democracy and other ways. But in this point, he said, I want to be clear and consistent. We seek to responsibly manage the competition between our countries so it does not tip into conflict. I've said we are for de-risking, not decoupling on China, still insisting we will push back on aggression. I'm not so sure he really means those words. And I don't think the Chinese are either. Reference Ukraine. A senior member of the House Republican leader, was telling Politico there are not enough Republican votes to send Ukraine more aid. House Intel Committee Chairman Mike Turner, Republican, Ohio, had predicted Zelensky, quote, makes the case better than anyone, and he could be very persuasive in getting reluctant Republicans to back more aid. And, of course, he'll be addressing Congress also after addressing the UN. One other GOP member laughed at those remarks, saying, Mike Turner has a pet unicorn. I hope it has offspring. I'd like to buy one of them. He said, get out of here. It's crazy. We do not have the votes in the Republican conference for any more Ukraine funding. There is a member of the GOP House who was born in Ukraine. She is now a U.S. citizen. And she was talking about what she thinks the value is of Ukraine and really what we as a nation should be doing. Now, when you listen to her, I want you to keep in mind she is Ukrainian born. Indiana Congresswoman Victoria Spartz.
And I'll be honest with you. You know, you have to have American people on board. This never-ending wars. People are actually sick and tired. And American people need to be communicated the importance of us winning that war. But also, I think it's also important for us to push back an organization like UN that failed, not just Ukraine. They failed Africa. They failed Middle East. You know, I mean, we have to be not just go there, have dinners and all of these nice meetings in New York. We should say, you know, what you stand with us, we're going to stop this insanity, and we're going to help some countries and people to survive, or we're not going to be funding, you know, this very wealthy, you know, high paying jobs. American taxpayers get nothing because we still have to, you know, pay money directly to solve all these crises and help for people. I mean, millions of people are suffering around the world. Why are we doing that?
And within that, I got the gist that she's also questioning the money, any more money for Ukraine. She didn't say it in so specific words, but why are we funding all these big high-priced dinners you go to? And you don't do anything. Well, as far as funding and what money you have available, the word is obviously that the government's supposedly running out of money September 30th. So McCarthy and his group came up with a CR plan, continuing resolution. But there's opposition, and much of the opposition is inside his party.
With just 7 working days left to avert a government shutdown, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says a continuing resolution will be brought to the floor on Thursday to vote, no matter what. Watch.
This is work that members got together that come from different aspects of the conference and work throughout the weekend for the good of the country. Members are going to sit down, be able to work through it. It's less than 170-some pages. A lot of it is part of what we have passed before.
The important part of the CR is it also includes important policy riders related to securing the border. And I will tell you, Maria, that is a catastrophe no matter where you are, not just in southern border states like Texas, but my home state like New York.
Now, again, that was New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik at the end of the Maria Bartiromo report. And, of course, you heard Kevin McCarthy in there talking about how important this is right now. But inside the plan that they're presenting does include making sure that we bring some security, additional security. I wouldn't even say that it's actually ending the chaos at the border, but at least we realize how threatening it is to our national security. I don't know that that message is really being heard. We'll spend more time on that before we wrap up this hour. But here you have the GOP hardliners, the Freedom Caucus, saying we want to stop spending. We've already hit $33 trillion. $33 trillion. Can you even begin to fathom the number? You might as well go out and stand on the seashore and start trying to count the pebbles of sand. We are not going to see this go down easily. We already had earlier today a planned vote that was scheduled at 2:30 Eastern time. That got blown out. And of course, then the additional efforts that have happened the rest of the day up to now. And anything at any point can come undone. Even on a passage today, it can all come undone. But I would tell you this, the leftist media and the progressives are loving, absolutely loving and watching this, what amounts to a dogfight inside the GOP.
This is not conservative republicanism. This is stupidity. They don't know how to take yes for an answer. It's a clown show. If you want to have a stronger hand, run better candidates and win more elections. You keep running lunatics, you're going to be in this position.
I think we're headed for a government shutdown with no end in sight. Part of it is we're not having real conversations.
Take a shot at me. I'm going to say something. You know,
didn't we go through this back in January? 62275, baby. I ain't worried about none of that stuff.
As you can see there, tempers flaring a bit in the House. House Republicans are in chaos as time runs out to prevent a government shutdown. Congress now has less than 2 weeks to pass at least a stopgap spending bill. And conservative hardliners, they are lining up against Speaker Kevin McCarthy's proposed short-term deal to avoid a shutdown. He's also facing the threat of potentially being ousted as Speaker altogether.
And to that extent, Matt Gaetz the other day stood up on the floor and called him out directly. You recall that, where he said basically, let me put it in the most common usage nowadays. A parent to the child, I brought you into this world, I can take you out of it. Now, it's meant to be a direct statement to the child, not actually that you're going to do harm to them. But as far as McCarthy's talking, I mean, not McCarthy, but the Florida Florida Representative Matt Gaetz, he's serious about it. He cast the deciding vote that finally gave McCarthy the House chairmanship. And I have no doubt they're meeting behind doors even as I speak, saying, we're going to have to do something else here. This is not the play. In fact, before we wrap up, in the next segment coming up, I'm going to focus on one GOP congresswoman who's right in McCarthy's face. She is calling him out for everything he's been doing wrong. The list could be long, long, long. We're not going to have time for the entire list. But she is, to say the least, irate. You'll be hearing from her before we wrap up. And, of course, where do we stand on the impeachment inquiry? And to that extent, there is word that the first impeachment inquiry will take place September the 28th. At the same time, there's a report that Joe Biden has said, I'll probably be dead before Hunter Biden's legal issues are resolved. We'll get into all of it before we wrap up this hour. And in the ocean, environmentalists are killing whales. Where's the outcry? They're looking away. Lock and load. Ready on the right. I want to share something special with you. I've told you how Wellington Environmental works to keep hospitals, schools, businesses safe for their patients, students, clients, employees. Wellington can do the same for you. Perfect example. A relative went to the basement, almost knocked over by the smell. A sewer line had broken. A call to Wellington, a crew was dispatched. First thing, make the home safe. Then clean up the mess. Truly clean it up. Now I'm telling you this because I want the best for you. Wellington Environmental. Here's the number, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rating with a Better Business Bureau. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington. If you like premium cigars and whiskey, I've got the perfect place. Lit Cigar Lounge, now open in its new space in the district, just off Highway 40 in Chesterfield. Lit Cigars for anyone who enjoys great cigars, whiskey, bourbon, tequila. Ladies, that includes you. Leather seating, numerous big screen TVs, special events featuring live music and tastings. More details at litstl.com. litstl.com. Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
The decision to release this statement, this was not subtle. Why?
Well, I'll be honest with you. It's unfortunate to me to see what's really happening in our country. And I take full responsibility for the leadership of my party, because I truly believe if we don't stand up and fight for the people, there is no one left there. So, you know, I never vote for leadership in another party. I never support it. But the leadership of my party should be accountable to the American people. And we should never be in a situation like that at the end of September, not be able to deal with authorization, with budgeting. This is a number one issue that Congress should have dealt for most of the time. And unfortunately, we spend very little time dealing with our main functions, and everyone does a lot of entertainment. But we have people's lives at stake, and we cannot do politics and circuses. And I always, every leader should take full responsibility. And Kevin should take responsibility for his failure to lead on this. And I offered my help. Listen, this is one issue that I actually have an expertise. I could help. I offer to help, but ultimately it's a decision of a leader if leaders want to lead or not.
Well, those words directed at Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House, GOP, come from a fellow GOP member. That is Indiana Congresswoman Victoria Spartz, who born in Ukraine. The statement, the question was phrased to her by CNN in the beginning, saying that your statement here is not subdued. Why are you so strong? Basically, in your face, Kevin McCarthy. Let me read the statement for you. This is what she had put out. It is a shame that our weak speaker, that's a slap in the face to McCarthy right there. It is a shame that our weak speaker cannot even commit to having a commission discuss our looming fiscal catastrophe. Our children will be ashamed of having another worthless Congress. Well, she just threw him under the bus, and at the same time made it clear that I'm willing to take responsibility where I am, but I've offered to help. I remind you again how close it was for McCarthy to be elected. 15 ballots before he was elected. 15. So there's not a great, he does not say he has a consensus on anything. And now the decision to come up with the continuing resolution. Now, granted, and you got to keep this in mind, McCarthy still has to deal with Schumer on the other side. And Schumer knows you don't really have a lot of support over there. I can sit here and just have another cup of coffee while you worry about how you're going to keep your members in line. And Biden certainly didn't step in to get a budget done. They could have. But their playbook is just let the time run out and penalize the Republicans if there's a shutdown. Now, Spartz says, again, Indiana Congresswoman Spartz says, we've got to choose our battles, and this is one we need to go to war on.
It's one thing to fight, to get a position, and go and tell different things, but another thing is to fight for the issues and go in the trenches and win these issues. There is a difference, and I haven't seen hard work in anyone in this Congress actually to fight something for we the people, and it is tough because you have a machine coming at you, a lot of special interest groups attacking you with big money. The Senate is so corrupt that we cannot even move. And I told Kevin, I really don't care what the Senate does and say. We're an independent branch of government under Republican leadership. We have to lead, and we need to question what's happening in the Senate.
I think that is correct, but of course the problem is the Senate is considers itself above the House of Representatives. And part of that is because each senator is elected for a six-year term. The lowlifes of the House have to go up for election every 2 years. They no sooner get sworn in than they need to start campaigning because they're months away from running again. That's the way it was set up in our Constitution. Our founding fathers decided that'd be the best check and balance. Let the representatives truly represent the public, and let the senators, only two to each state, regardless of how big your state is or isn't, so that would balance that. And then between the two of them, they would actually maybe get something done. Sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't. Sparks was not done issuing her statement to McCarthy. I want to go back and pick up part of what she had to say and then carry it forward.
I really don't care what the Senate does and say. We're an independent branch of government under Republican leadership. We have to lead, and we need to question what's happening in the Senate because we also equal chamber. Honestly, I think we're even stronger people because we have to run every 2 years and we have to be more accountable to the American people. But if no one stands up for this country, we're going to fail our children and people that die for it. And I am so sick and tired of BS.
Well, you're in the wrong house, lady. Anywhere in Capitol, you're in the wrong place. There's a lot of BS up there. I'll remind you of something, by the way. Any member of the House can call for a motion to oust McCarthy. Any member can stand up and say, I call for a motion. And, of course, it has to be presented, voted, and then you see what happens next. In addition to the continuing resolution and trying to come up with a budget bill, the thing that McCarthy finally put into play, and no doubt under a lot of pressure, because he said, I'm not quite ready, and we'll make sure it is ready. And to that extent, Congressman Comer overseeing the House Oversight Committee and Jordan of the Judiciary Committee were kind of going along with him, giving him some support, saying, we want to make sure we have everything ready to go. We don't want to do the Adam Schiff just shoot from the hip and make it up as you go along. We want everything locked down regarding Joe Biden and any involvement he had in Hunter Biden's business practices, which could involve eventually treason against the standing president. Well, the House Oversight Committee has now scheduled its first impeachment inquiry. That's going to take place later this week, Thursday, as a matter of fact. They say it's going to focus on constitutional and legal questions surrounding the president's involvement in corruption and abuse of public office. Again, this is a hearing. But they've also said they plan to subpoena Hunter Biden and James Biden's bank records this week before they get to that meeting. Now, that is exactly what the House impeachment inquiry gives them authority to do. They can now use that to get personal bank records. They've already seen bank documents that the banks had to supply to the FDIC and to the banking institution, Treasury Department. If you see any money being deposited above 10 grand, we need to know about it, and you need to be questioning how it got there and from whom. Is it money laundering, drug money? Is it money being paid for a country to get a favor from the White House? That's the question I want right now. So they say they are going to move forward and impeach, or rather subpoena, Hunter Biden and James Biden. I'm glad to see that because we have heard from the New York Attorney General, Letitia James because she's going after Trump and his businesses. She has a 57-person list on those she's calling, looking into anything she can find on him. I mean, it's a full-scale mop-up, whatever's on the floor. And buried deep inside of it, they are listing not just some of his lawyers and bankers, but members of his family, his kids. And I thought, if they're going to be doing that, and we have known that she was planning to, when are we going to get to the point we're going after Biden's kids, and in particular, Hunter Biden, and getting him on the stand facing perjury charges if he lies? And Joe Biden. Not Joe Biden, but Jim Biden, his brother, Joe Biden's brother. They cannot claim executive privilege. They'll find some way to maybe to weasel out of it. The New York Times is reporting, according to those close to the president, the possibility of a federal indictment of Hunter Biden stunned the president. That was referenced Special Counsel Weiss the other day, last week, announcing that we are going to indict him on 3 gun-related charges. If convicted on all 3, can serve consecutively 25 years in prison. And apparently some of the same sources close to the Bidens had told NBC News after the indictment Weiss said would be coming, the president and first lady became, quote, resigned to the fact that Hunter's legal problems will likely worsen in the months ahead. Hunter and Joe Biden are very close. They frequently talk on the phone that we know they do. Then they got the burner phones. We don't know when and how often and what they're discussing at that time. The New York Times says President Biden considers Hunter as an informal advisor. He even helped shape his speeches. Maybe that'll be a way to get out of it. Say, hey, I cannot be called. I'm basically working for Daddy. I mean, the president. We'll see if that holds up. The president, of course, still insisting, as he did back in May, my son's done nothing wrong. But then again, according to the New York Times, he apparently has been stating, I could be dead before Hunter Biden's legal issues are resolved, fearing more legal issues still to come. Coming up, if you think our nation is getting better about anything when it comes to border security, not so, my friend.
Allen Outdoor Solutions knows what you want. An oasis, a place at your home to relax, enjoy, entertain. Allen Outdoor Solutions can design and build your oasis. A spacious stone patio, different levels, maybe a fireplace, flowing water. See their quality work at AllenOutdoorSTL.com, AllenOutdoorSTL.com, or call 314-647-4800. AllenOutdoorSTL.com. This is a scary time when it comes to your money, especially if buying a home. That's why you need Homestead Financial Mortgage. I know the owners, met the team. You can trust Homestead will be with you every step of the way. Call 24/7 with any question or concern. Homestead is on your schedule, not banker's hours. This is not just about buying a home. It's about trust. You can go to my website, larry.homesteadfinancial.com. Larry.homesteadfinancial.com. This time of year, heavy rains, high winds, they can hit, and if you have any loose shingles, even the smallest hole in your roof, you're taking a major gamble with your biggest investment. I can tell you from personal experience, do not wait until you have water where it shouldn't be. Don't forget that John Beale has disaster crews, which can at least cover your roof until the damage can be fully repaired. Homeowner, business owner, call John Beal. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Baby, I got your number. Oh, and I know that you got mine. You know that I called you, I called too many times. You can call me baby, you can call me anytime. You got to call me.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You and I were down there when they got to record highs near 10,000 a day just before the end of Title 42. Then new policies came into place to make it more restrictive for asylum. And when we talked to people who were on the other side of the border in Mexico thinking about crossing, they were kind of in a wait-and-see moment to see how tough these restrictions might be. We saw the numbers start to increase over the summer, and now they are really rapidly increasing. We've been able to see in certain sectors some rises, some evidence of that rise. Street releases, when they're not able to find enough room for shelters in cities like San Diego and Nogales, Arizona. Then we've also been able to see the numbers of families rising in areas like Tucson and Rio Grande Valley. Now this actually takes into account a snapshot of one day across the entire border where they saw 7,500 crossings in a single day.
7,500 crossings of illegals in one day in one section of our border. That was an NBC report from the NBC News Homeland Security correspondent, Julia Ainsley, and talking with her colleague about the time we were down there and what we saw then and what we were told to expect, that the new policies, once they came in, make it more restrictive for asylum. And a lot of folks who were crossing or were already on the other side of border in Mexico were deciding, not sure what to do right now. Do we go now or do we wait? If it's going to become more restrictive, it might be harmful. She said at that time, it was a wait-and-see moment. Well, it's kind of tough to do that, isn't it? If you want to get into this country and you see everyone else running ahead of you, are you going to sit there forever and just wait and see? At some point, you're going to decide, I'm going. And then the guys behind you decide. And so then you get, as she pointed out, 7,500 crossings in one day in that one section they were observing. You stretch that across the entire border? We have no idea how many have come into the country under the Biden watch. If I tell you 2.5 million, that is far, far below even the most conservative estimates. Double that, you're getting a little closer. Some say you can almost 2.5 times that number. That doesn't count all the getaways, the ones that come across at night that the Border Patrol agents see on their night scopes, but they can't do anything about it. They're not near them. They see them crossing. By the time they get there, they're gone. And often those caught on those night scope cameras are young men, military age, and many are carrying weapons. We already know that many military age men from China have been crossing because we have caught numbers of them. I raised a question before, and we had one of our China experts on the other day, Gordon G. Chang, who is often on various networks. Is the effort here underway to build a fifth column? The idea of a fifth column is you get your forces inside the enemy's territory. This is akin to, if you want to make a sports analogy, a player from the other team gets to come join your huddle and hear what the plan is, and then go back and tell everybody how to destroy it. Since we're not fully vetting those coming in, they will tell you they're vetting, but they're not. We know when we were bringing folks out of Afghanistan to escape the Taliban, we brought in many that had not been properly vetted. They did not have the proper notices that we had given to those who had helped us through the 20 years of war. They just were able to get on the plane, and they're here now. And we were told, whoa, we will vet them before we actually bring them to the States. We'll take them to another country. In some cases that happened, in other cases it didn't. Does that mean that all who came from Afghanistan are terrorists? No. Any more than all Muslims are jihadists. All jihadists are terrorists. But that NBC report was, even they were acknowledging, if we thought this was going to get better, it wasn't. And then came the issue that they're all acknowledging, as we all do now, the frustration of what's happening.
These numbers are starting to rise as they typically do this time of year, but it's significant now because it's showing that those new policies put in place in mid-May, just when you and I left the border because of the end of Title 42, those new policies are not having as big of an impact as they did initially. And a lot of it is because Mexico can only take back so many migrants per day that they turn away. Migrants are learning that, starting to take things into their own hands, and starting to get frustrated when they're not able to get appointments or try to get into the U.S. the legal way.
And stop it, right? It's not really the legal way even then, the way the Biden administration set it up. It's not a legal way because they would have to claim asylum, and if they've gotten into Mexico from whatever country they escaped for asylum, they're in a country that they escaped from, so that's where they should stay. And the Trump policy was, if you're claiming asylum, you stay in Mexico while we adjudicate it, and then we will let you into the country if it's legitimate asylum. Many are economic refugees. You have to take compassion upon them, but we can't open the door for every refugee in the world. Even if all the ones that have now come in, if they're not gang members, they're not terrorists, they're not bringing in fentanyl, they're not raping children along the way and then turning them into sex dens once they get here, if they're all well above that, they are the best citizen you could have in America, other than the fact that they lived somewhere else previously and they came in illegally. They still have violated, one, our federal law, with the permission of our administration. And two, look at the strain on resources. Unless they're bringing some skill that can be applied and help, they're going to be looking for handout. Now, they may do it for a short time or a long time. There are many that are resettled here from different wars. St. Louis is an enclave of Bosnians that came in, and many of them have turned into hardworking American citizens. If not an American citizen, they are still providing. They're not relying on the government to hand them everything. Same thing with those who came from Vietnam and those through the boat lifts out of Cuba and elsewhere. But many are coming here to simply because they want a better country, want to be in the U.S. That we understand. But it is still ironic every day I think about it. When I hear so many complain about this country and what this country stands for and how bad we are and how we need to learn our manners, how we need to get things right. Those same people saying that here, are they thinking about moving to Cuba or Russia or any other country? Unless they're a rich Hollywood elite, the answer is probably no. And when they go, they're going to go to France, maybe the Alps. They're going to go really somewhere nice. They're going to be in high class, or as we used to say in Texas, high cotton anyway. So they're not going to care. Now, the other issue we have in the world, of course, is right now the push for green. We're told consistently, you've got to get rid of fossil fuels. We've got to use other means, such as wind turbines in the ocean. They are killing whales at an increasing amount. And I have to ask, do environmentalists think that is a good trade-off? If they're going to be honest with you, they're going to say, no, it's not. The same Greenpeace group that would go around chasing whaling boats, trying to stop them from killing whales or going after seals, apparently is willing to let this happen. Let me give you some numbers very quickly here. As of the last report, this would have been January a year ago, the wind turbine database for the U.S. shows more than 70,800 turbines in use. Most have been constructed since 1980. They span at least 44 states, and of course, not only the land, but the waters off of them, if they're near the water. Puerto Rico and Guam also included. And Texas has the largest installed capacity as far as the ability to produce energy. And they supposedly could produce something like, with the turbines they've got, maybe 26% of the nation's total. Delaware, the smallest capacity, and 40 states have basic utility scale wind facilities. Together, you put them all together, you're still looking at 10% of our nation's electricity. Even with Texas, supposedly, if everything's operational, that they could amount to 26%. That's of the needed megawatts, but they're not all operating all the time. They say they support 120,000 jobs across all 50 states. But since they've come into effect, we've had birds killed, migratory birds, protected birds, and then we have the issue in those in the ocean. And remember when they wanted to put them off Martha's Vineyard, where you find a lot of liberals and all about green energy. We're all for it. Until you put that damn windmill in my view out my house at Martha's Vineyard. Then I don't like it. Well, what about the whales? Matt Ridley, writing for The Spectator, pointed out Greenpeace is ignoring the science that doesn't suit it. He points out that so far, just last year, 71 whales washed up dead on the shores of New England and neighboring states. And that's been growing in recent years, along with the growth of offshore wind turbines. Some citizens are beginning to campaign and get about it, and one journalist made a short film about Thrown to the Wind, as it's titled. And they're saying the evidence gathered by the scientists in the film is far from conclusive. They say it's a correlation that could be just coinky-dinky. But Ridley says it's not a mad idea to think that wind farms would threaten whales. After all, we have had whales constantly colliding with ships, leading to damage, ships and whales. But they're saying now the sonar surveying that happens before they put wind farms out in the ocean, mapping the seabed, creates loud, continuous banging noise. It could be disorienting or stressful for whales. Where's Greenpeace? Nowhere to be found. And when it comes to investigating what did kill each whale of the 71 that washed ashore so far last year at that time, the U.S. government relies on a nonprofit group called the Atlantic Marine Conservation Society. And in the film, several board members did connect the wind industry to some of the deaths. Ridley, in his article, points out, you or I might take the view we should wait and see if better evidence emerges that wind turbines are killing the whales. But he said, where are the big environmental pressure groups such as Greenpeace? They ran a Save the Whales campaign. You remember that? Of course you do. You don't think they'd even wait for evidence. They'd just rush forward, put a stop to it. As he says, lack of definitive evidence never mattered to them in the past. So Greenpeace has not joined the campaign against offshore wind farms. Greenpeace, when questioned about it, dismisses it. and states on its website, in response to a tragic spate of whale deaths along the eastern coast, anti-science media, such as Fox News, long beholden to fossil fuel corporations, has amplified the baseless claims made with no supporting evidence by a small group of local mayors that offshore wind farming is somehow to blame. They're just dismissing it. They're saying no supporting evidence. Well, they're not looking for evidence themselves either. Wouldn't they do that if they are Greenpeace and they really want to save the whales? Would they not be out there investigating to see if, in fact, that is an issue? If they're not even doing that, then who's being bought off? Who's turning a blind eye to a threat? They point out that right now, the humpback whales have gotten stronger and bigger, but the North Atlantic right whales are maybe 340 left and failing at this point. So it's neglectful of the U.S. government, much less Greenpeace, to just ignore them. You would think that Greenpeace would be so interested that they would pursue their own investigation to prove the wind turbines are not affecting the sonar echoing to plot the land, the seabed, are not affecting the whales. That nothing that's being done on an environmental cause with the turbines has anything to do with the whale deaths. And yet they keep washing up in bigger and bigger numbers as more and more wind farms are built in the ocean. Political science or BS science? Remember our pledge, one nation under God.